two rules
to remember if you want to have a good time.
Rules. No rules.
Rule number one.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Rule number two.
You're a dragon. Be a dragon.
Ciao, Bella.
This week on Double Dragon, Steve and I cover The Princess and the Queen, wherein we talk a little bit too long about Aegon's favorite hobby. Then medievalist Kavita Mudon Finn joins us, followed by a short conversation with my daughter, who's home from college. So Nessa's back. All right, without further ado, here is comic Steve Osborne. Steve, Viserys lives.
He lives.
Such as he is, he's a little bit more zombie than man now.
He's not less gross after 10 years. 10 years. He made it. I'm a little surprised. I didn't realize you were doing that big of a time jump.
It was a pretty boring 10 years. Let's jump right ahead.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently just a decade of making babies.
I don't know. I mean, I like the new actors. I think that there's some residual effect about sort of my emotional investment, even though I know this is Rhaenyra. I just don't have the screen time with this particular actor, and so it's hard for me to sort of find an emotional connection.
Yeah, it is interesting though, right? I mean, like, that's Rhaenyra, I have to like force myself to be interested in the same way, I should say. When they changed the Dukes of Hazzard, you know, and Bo and Luke, they replaced them with their cousins, you know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure, there's the car, and there's Roscoe, and there's, you know, it's, you know, latent racist hijinks ensue. It just wasn't the same.
The same at all. I feel like in the first five episodes, I felt like Rhaenyra was the more interesting of the two characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Alicent was sort of super passive, and, you know, I certainly felt connected to her out of sympathy. And then we sort of saw her take agency toward the end of the last episode. 10 years later, this is totally flipped.
Right.
Alicent is the one that's interesting. She's the one behind the scenes machinations. And Rhaenyra, aside from, you know, consciously choosing over and over again to not have Targaryen babies.
Yeah.
Things are just
like
kind of
almost
happening.
Compulsively.
Sure. I mean, well, come on. Look at Harwin.
Sleep in front of the commander of the city watch. Terrible lack of respect.
A certain insolence runs in the family, I'm afraid.
I mean, sure. You wouldn't jump out of that guy's bed.
I know, but I mean, I give him a baby.
Not three.
I don't need to give. I'm not giving him the trilogy.
All right, I've identified five storylines. I'm going to start with one that I think is fairly removed, because I feel like these other four storylines are going to mesh together.
Okay.
This is Daemon and family. So Laena and Daemon entertain with their dragon riding tricks. Then at dinner, Reggio offers them a manse and farmlands in exchange for protection. Daemon seems to like this prospect better than Laena. Daemon broods and drinks outside and claims that he doesn't miss Westeros. Laena's birth goes tragically bad. And when maternal mortality looms, she decides to have her dragon light her up.
Sure does.
This is an interesting... Just so you know, this is sort of like one of those things where the Game of Thrones world's a little bit different than the real medieval world.
The dragon thing?
Yeah. Being torched by a dragon.
Not typical.
All right, so let me just say this. I feel like I can relate to middle-aged, dull Daemon much better.
than sexy Tornado Daemon.
Yeah, I feel like that guy was never quite sure what are his motives. Now I think, oh no, I totally understand this guy. He's super dull. He wants to go upstairs and read.
Ignores his kids.
Not a great communicator with his wife. I can, you know, I'm not saying that that's me. I'm saying I can totally relate to that.
Yeah, but there is that point where I'm just like, okay, so this is now Game of Thrones, mirror to my own life edition.
Sure. They, well, you know, they wanted, they heard our cries. They heard us like saying like, hey, who can really relate to these Targaryens? You know, they're so different than the, you know, okay, let's give you one that's just totally dull. He just wants to read.
Yeah, and it's Daemon Targaryen now.
And he is kind
Still a chaos agent, right? Like, I mean, no one saw this coming.
No. He is one of those guys that kind of goes on vacation for the first time in a long time and decides, hey, let's look at real estate here. This is a nice place.
Right.
So, anyway, I like this new Daemon. He's a little bit more relatable.
He's accessible.
He's not a great dad, let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that's not shocking, I guess.
Yeah, the fact, if he was just equally aloof to everyone, that'd be fine, but he seems to genuinely love his wife, genuinely love one of his daughters, and totally ignore the other daughter.
Right, yeah.
Maybe he doesn't know that he has two daughters.
It's just a big house.
He's not paying attention very much. He's like, are you the one? Wait, I thought you were the one. And I do that from time to time. I will call, you know, my kids by the other kid's name from time to time.
Well, that happens for sure. Yeah, I call my kids my dog's name a lot of times.
Call your kids the dog's name?
Sometimes it's even more so. I think we call like the dogs, the kids' names.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's pretty clear who's the most important. The fur babies are more important than the real babies in the Osborne family.
Maybe. These ones are, you know, they show us affection.
Has the new dog coming?
Coming along great.
Yeah, you think you're going to keep old Henley around?
I think we're going to keep Henley around, and it'll be the first dog that we keep the name of.
You're going to keep the name.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's I'm this is Heather's really big on it, and I'm fine with it, you know.
All right. Yeah.
Like, it's whenever I say the dog's name, I get a Don Henley song in my head. But it's never one that I, like, particularly care for.
Well, tell me the ones you care for.
Well, I mean, if it was Boys of Summer, I'd be all right with that.
You don't start singing The Dogs of Summer?
No, I sing The End of the Innocence. And, like, that's not a song of his that I particularly care for.
I think
but that's the one.
This tells me something about the way you feel about the dog.
Interesting.
He's not The Dogs of Summer. He's The End of Innocence.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is weird. And it's of all the song, I would have even settled for, you know, All She Wants to Do Is Dance. But.
Now, Rhaenyra and Lenor have a little dispute over naming their child's name.
Right.
And it seems like Lenor kind of like jumps in, like before they, like, are they just never talking? They haven't discussed the name, the baby's name at all?
What's been going on for 10 years, man?
He's been home maybe like three times in the last 10 years.
Another one.
Him and Carl have just been out having a grand old time.
Yeah, they sure have. Oh, my goodness.
So this brings us to the next story. All right, I'll read this one. So Rhaenyra gives birth to a strapping baby boy. When Allison sends for the baby, she leaves her birthing bed and goes herself. Lenor tries to seem useful and then names the baby Joffrey. Allison checks the baby's hair color. Sir Harwin is especially affectionate with the baby and seems extremely familiar with the other two sons of Rhaenyra. In her chambers, she commands Lenor to remain in King's Landing rather than go to war. At the King's Council, she proposes a marriage alliance between Jacerys and Helaena. Allison appears cold to the offer and ends the meeting. When Harwin is sent away, Rhaenyra informs Lenor that they are going to Dragonstone and that Carl should come with. So I'm watching this episode with my daughter and my mom. My parents are visiting. My daughter was home from college. And so the three of us were watching this episode together. And when Lenore names the baby Joffrey, my mom gives an audible gasp.
She's just taken.
She was shocked. She was not happy, I don't think. I feel like it was like not for the reason that everyone else was shocked. You know, it's not because this is not a typical name for a Targaryen.
Well, yeah, I guess she's such a Targaryen traditionalist.
It's not because my mom's a Targaryen traditionalist. It's because that name in this universe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's a little bit like naming your kid Mussolini or something.
Yeah, it's Cosby.
Yeah, you're not going to name your kid Cosby. Yeah, so, yeah, we got another Joffrey. And clearly this means that Lenore, 10 years later, still holding the flame for Mr. No Face.
Yeah, but not for the firstborn. Took him a couple kids. So.
I think that he didn't really have much of a say. I think this was a strategic thing. He's like, I'm not going to talk to her about the name this time.
I'm just going to go for it.
I'm just, when the first time someone asks me what the name is, I'm just going to blurt it out and then it'll stick. At one point in this storyline, he actually says, look, I've been here for 10 years. I feel I am owed. And she doesn't let him finish the sentence.
Right.
And she says, you are owed nothing. And you're basically going to do what I want you to do. I feel a little bit for him. I'm feeling like, owed nothing? Like, your boyfriend killed my boyfriend.
Right.
Yeah, that's not worth anything. Like, clearly he's still in love with the guy 10 years later. He's still living with that loss. I think that she's a little bit too harsh with him. And I get it, you know. He's not doing any of the work. He's out having fun with Good Time Carl or whatever his name is. And, you know, that can grate. I don't know. A little bit harsh with Lenore, in my view.
Why is she having so many babies with this guy?
I don't think they quite understand contraception. Is that what it is?
I mean, because it's... But I mean, you know, get any of that moon tea? I mean, I'd be heading to, like, you know, a King's Landing Costco and just getting in bulk at this rate. I mean, she's...
Maybe she wants kids, you know? Maybe it's like, look, this is the life. You wanted me to marry this guy. He's going to go have his fun. I'm going to settle in with Harwin.
I'm going to have my fun and just squeeze out babies.
She wants babies. She's just a different kid. She's a different person now. 10 years later, you're a different person. A lot can change in 10 years.
Yeah, you become a different actress.
Sometimes that happens.
Sometimes I look at pictures of myself 10 years ago and I'm like, who was playing that guy?
That young guy's got a lot of potential.
Yeah. Why did they replace him with this guy?
With this Rhaenyra, we're seeing her worried in a way that only a parent can worry for the first time. It's like the carefree, dragon riding, you know, devil may care, Rhaenyra's gone. This is what being a parent can do.
Well, 10 years is just sort of just made everybody a bummer. If you look around, I mean, Damon went from being this chaos agent to like, I just like to read my mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got Rhaenyra is just like, yeah, I just want to keep having babies. Like, and is it that she wants babies, or is it that she can't help but be rebellious? And this is like the ultimate rebellion, right? Just keep on having babies.
That's not how I'm reading this. I think I'm reading this as she's comfortable. She's in love with Harwin. She's going to continue to be with Harwin. No one's stopping her. No one's telling her not to be. They seem to feel like they've got a pretty good situation. Until this third baby comes along, it seems to me like there hasn't been any blowback for the brown hair babies.
Well, there clearly is. It just hasn't. This is like, yeah, three was too many. Like three was just too many. Bridge too far.
Sure.
Three was a bridge too far, I guess.
And I was thinking, like, maybe, like, that's why Allison wants to see the baby directly after birth. It's like, I don't want her to dye the baby's hair or shave the baby's head or something.
Right, right.
I don't know. Why does Allison want to see the baby if not for that reason?
It's got to be, yeah, to have it that soon, I think it's got to be some, it's all has to do with the, they know what's really going on. And,
right.
But I don't, yeah, I mean, I was a little nervous at first. I'm like, because I didn't know quite what we were dealing with. Because I didn't know, I mean, I figured, you know, obviously if Viserys is still alive, if Rhaenyra is still being referred to as a princess, so.
Right.
So I figured that out, you know. So I'm like, because there would, you know, not like Allison just in 10 years or whatever, just completely maintained her reign or somehow, mm-hmm. you know. So, mm-hmm. so there's, it was a little sinister, it felt, you know, like I felt like, ooh, is there something, is Allison going to do something to the baby? You know, I wasn't sure. Like,
oh, interesting.
How we're getting introduced, you know.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
But, now, like I said, now all of a sudden it becomes clear. The whispers are getting louder, and now it's coming back to the family. But why? Like, why then? Was it because of the incident in the courtyard or in the sparring?
Yeah, I think maybe it's sort of like Allison's thinking, like, she can't possibly expect us to believe that this is Lenore's baby 3 times in a row. Come on. Like, what did she say? Like, first time is an accident, third time is an insult.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like, that gets to a point where it's just like, now she just, it's, she's living, like you said, comfortable, not just the lifestyle, but just comfortable in terms of just, I keep doing this all, I can do this all damn day.
And she does.
You don't think I will? You don't think I'll throw another baby out there?
I mean, it sort of becomes obvious with Harwin's clear favor of his biological son in the courtyard. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like sometimes Allison will say something to someone that she thinks that she's just gossiping with. Like these men, like they're gossiping with the queen. But like Kristen Cole's like, I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna poke this a little bit and see if I can swing things in the queen's favor.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, but what I think is interesting is that, like, everybody just kind of knows it, so why, I mean, and then this, I guess, is the way to get it to be circumstantially proven anyway, and yeah. There'll be some sort of consequence now, because it's, you know, something so egregious takes place. I'm wrapping my head around the whole, 10 years of just sort of this, whatever all that was. I mean, I guess we should be glad we skipped over the 10 years because it looks like whatever it got to everyone to be so boring.
A lot less masturbation scenes because of this, the 10 year skip. Like, we're just going to spare these guys the nightly ritual of Aegon over the city.
Yeah.
We'll just show it once.
What a power play.
We'll show it once. Just to tell you what this guy's all about, but that's it.
yeah, a lot of character development in that one movie.
All right, this brings us to the boys' storyline. The two blondies and the two brunettes are taught about dragons. It seems that Allison's younger son Aemon has no dragon of his own and is shamed by a pig with wings. He descends below the dragon pit and is menaced by a dragon and then scolded by his mother. Later on, Aegon gratifies himself. His mother walks in and explains the Game of Thrones to him. While sparring, Kristen sets Jaehaerys and Aegon against each other. This sparks a reaction from Harwin. Harwin punches Kristen repeatedly after he suggests that Harwin is the father. Harwin is forced back to Harrenhal with Lionel. He says goodbye to the boys, and Jaehaerys figures out who his true father is. Yeah, all right, so let's talk about these boys. I mean, this is, in all of the ways that I'm really loving the kids in Stranger Things, mm-hmm. I don't really feel a connection with these boys.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're odd ducks. I mean, there is something I think it's interesting too to see how this is going to develop because there's such key components uh-huh. to the to the overall outlook of the realm, right? I mean, it's a pretty big deal. We hear it when Alicent's explaining, you know, again, Aegon's what he's basically the challenge that he has by either being a challenge or not.
And yeah, just by breathing, he's a challenge.
Yeah, yeah, right. And I think that was a really interesting scene. I like that. I thought that was pretty cool. Just the way for her to try to drive it home. It's like, well, you don't get to choose not to have this be a part of your life.
I would just say, look, I don't usually give other people parenting advice because it's not my business, but Allison, there might have been a better time to approach Aegon with like the most important lesson he's ever going to learn.
Do you think Rhaenyra's sons will be your playthings forever?
So?
If Rhaenyra comes into power, your very life could be forfeit.
Then I won't.
You are the challenge! Oh. You are the challenge, Aegon! Simply by living and breathing! You are the king's firstborn son. And what they know, what everyone in the realm knows, in their blood and in their bones, is that one day you will be our king.
How about later? How about later after dinner?
Yeah.
He's a little busy. He's a little bit busy.
Yeah, yeah. But I like how, like she just like, he's doing the thing at the window again. Like, it was just sort of like... Like, you know what? It's like, if I try to find a time when he's not in the window to have this heart to heart, I'll never have this heart to heart.
So my daughter was like, it was an interesting parallel with that window because she associates that window with Tommen going out the window.
Mm. Right.
Because he's so in love. Marjorie has just burned alive. He can't live without her. And he like goes out the window. Clearly, Aegon's in love with himself.
Right, and also going out the window.
in a different kind of way, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
all right, so these boys, you know, they're sort of taunting poor Aemond. And Aemond is, you know, he's clearly shamed by this pig.
Yeah, that's a... different time.
Valerian the Pink Dread. I mean, look.
They put wings on it.
What's so bad? I mean, look. Clearly, he feels insecure about this. And sort of they're finding a weakness in him. The thing that maybe he's most ashamed about. And they're kind of making fun of.
Well, the dragon is what? Puberty, right? Essentially, that's what we're talking about here. Like he's a late bloomer.
He's a late bloomer. And they're making fun of him that... the pig joke was a little, I will say, it's a little funny. I will, I know it's bullying behavior. I don't want to condone that, but it was a little bit funny. Come on, Allison. It was a tiny bit funny.
So it's like, we just learned that just nobody likes Aemond. I mean, there's.
No one cares. I mean, look, Allison doesn't really care about Aemond, because he's not the heir to the throne. You can kind of see how someone like Daemon Targaryen becomes Daemon Targaryen, right? Being a second son in this world, even if you're as wealthy as Sin, you know, it's a little bit emasculating at times.
Yeah, and your brother will think you're a twat.
all right, so you're feeling about the new boys in this show.
Aegon's worth watching.
What does he look like to you? I was thinking he looks a little bit like Pete Townsend in The Who or something.
Is that what you got, Pete Townsend?
I don't know. There's something about that sort of that frizzy white hair that I don't know. It reminds me. He's a little bit 80s glam rock, don't you think?
Yeah, no, maybe a little Dave Mustaine from Megadeth.
Yeah, okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
That's good. I can bet you Dave Mustaine has done his business outside of a hotel window.
Oh, absolutely. The odds are that happened multiple times. We don't know for sure. We're just no spoilers.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it doesn't seem too far reaching to come up with that.
Okay, this next storyline is the rise and fall of Lionel Strong. Lionel accuses Harwin of disgrace and treachery for having sired three sons with Rhaenyra. Harwin denies the accusation. Later, after the small council meeting, Lionel visits the king and the queen and attempts a resignation. The king refuses, but allows Lionel to take leave and bring Harwin back to Harrenhal. Once at the haunted castle, both father and son are burned. Yeah, so much for Lionel Strong.
It was a good ten year run, though. I mean, you talked about how he would be a good hand, and he clearly was.
Not as good as Aegon.
No, he's the hand of the future king.
All right. I think that we can kind of rightly judge him in retrospect. He wasn't conniving, at least as anything that we saw. He was a pretty good hand. He wasn't ambitious in the way that would give the king bad advice or self-interested. He was just a good guy.
Trying to remove himself when it looked like it was a conflict of interest.
Absolutely. I think in retrospect, we got to think that guy was pretty smart, pretty good hand, and he's dead. He's gone.
He gone.
Okay. Lena was interesting, and she seemed like a relatively good person.
Mm-hmm.
Harwin had his faults, but he was okay. I enjoyed watching him. He didn't seem like he was all bad, right?
Right.
Lionel, we've learned in retrospect, not really ambitious, just a good, smart character. All dead.
All dead. All dead right now.
And who's left? Psychopath Larys. That's who's left. That's who we have to work with. And you know what? He's an interesting guy. I'll give him that much. But
he isn't in. We got him. We got our sinister fella.
Right. We got our sinister fella. And I will say, look, all the people who seem like relatively good folks are just dying like flies.
Well, and it seems like maybe over the course of 10 years, these good folks, the reason why maybe it was so boring for 10 years is because that's what when things are going well.
Right. You know, yeah, not enough conflict.
Good people in positions where they can influence some of these rapscallions.
Uh-huh.
And then now it's like, so maybe that's part of this whole 10-year too. It's like, yeah. All right, we've gone 10 years, and now we've taken some of those moral compasses and some of those good advice givers, and we're just they're dispatched.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So when Lionel was chiding Harwin for his indiscretion, Harwin says, "You have your honor and I have mine." I think I'm reading that as, your honor is about looking good to everyone else. It would have been dishonorable for me not to defend my biological son when he's being bullied.
Mm.
And it's almost like
regardless of the consequence, this is my child. And you're, in one way, you're not doing that for me right now.
Right. Exactly. It's like, what does it mean to be a good father? Does it mean, like, put your whole house in the best political place to advance? Or maybe throw the consequences to the wind and just help your child?
Right.
You know, this is sort of a Tywin Lannister question. You know, Tywin would absolutely do what's best for the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I thought that was an interesting conversation because later on we get this little voiceover with Larys, and he basically says, "What are children if not a weakness?"
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like a way for you to pretend that you're escaping death, that you think that you're going to live on through your children. In reality, sometimes your love for your children is the problem. And so this is sort of Larys is taking the absolute opposite view on the value of legacy. He's willing to burn down the whole thing, literally.
Well, and as somebody who's probably not the favorite son by virtue of...
Again, second son issue, right?
Second son issue. He's not clearly not the fighter and the that his brother is anyway. And it's, you know, and so there's shades of the sort of the Tyrion. Maybe there's that, you know, even though Lionel seems like a much better father and person in general, there's still maybe some of that, like that, some of that carryover. And what, you know, like, whereas Tyrion was somebody who, you know, sort of rose above as much as he could, and it influenced his station. You know, maybe Laris has some of that, but he's gone more Lex Luthor with it.
Well, and both of those characters kill their fathers.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's sort of a second parallel with this. I was kind of surprised. I knew Laris was sort of a devious, conniving person. I was shocked to see. I thought that those brothers were pretty tight. I wasn't expecting that this at all.
Well, yeah, and it just shows that, you know, there's like with Lionel and you know, we talk about how he's got this. You know, he's a good hand, he's a good man, and they're having these discussions about honor. Meanwhile, Laris is in the background, and he has a whole different a plan, and honor doesn't seem to be a major priority for him.
No. Well, and he talks a little bit about when he's talking to Alicent afterwards. You know, he's like, look at, you know, people who are superstitious, they believe that the castle's haunted. And, you know, this castle has a history of doing weird things.
You've heard the stories of Harrenhal, your grace. It's built in hubris by Harren the Black as a monument to his own greatness. Blood mixed into the mortar. It is said to be a cursed place. That it passes judgment on all who pass beneath its gate.
And he's almost saying, like, these people who are so invested in honor are the same people who are superstitious, and so they're going to believe it. They're not gonna bat an eye. They're gonna think, oh yeah, someone else died at Harrenhal, burned down again. But Alicent knows,
right? But Alicent is one of these, like, okay, you know. And so when you look at too, and you look at the whole concept of honor and the concept of what, you know, Laris is also like, well, I'm also in a position to do this because of my father and my brother's skewed, or maybe in his opinion, skewed views of honor, right? They're both of them could have, you know, behaved differently that would have prevented a lot of this, a lot of these issues. We've got, you know, we have these three kids that my brother brought in, and, you know, against the way things should be. And then if my father is a good hand, but he also could have maybe spoke a little sense to the king, maybe won. You know, it's like, this was like one of the worst kept secrets in the kingdom, right? And it's like, it took 10 years and three kids to finally, like, get it to crack a little
bit. Yeah, maybe I am giving them too much credit. I think it's like, from what I've seen on screen, he gives good advice. He's smart. He's not ambitious. But I think that the other way to look at this is, it's under his watch that Alicent is now running the kingdom, and Viserys has just basically become even more passive than he was before.
Right.
His problem as a king, he was always passive.
Right.
And now,
and it's easier to be continually passive if you have somebody around you who's going to be much more aggressive.
Right. Yeah. And so it's almost like Alicent has taken Otto's place at this point.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it's 10 years of just sort of like, yeah, you know, he was probably the perfect king or the perfect hand for this king and what that king wants.
Uh-huh.
Not someone that's going to maybe challenge him a bunch. Give good advice. The advice is good. It's solid. We're in peace. Things are fine. So obviously he's a good hand. But he also is like, I'll go ahead and. If he knew, you know, I mean, if he obviously knew, and it was his son, you know, that was, so he, like, he was protecting his son. So he was, to some degree, not advising differently. He helped enable his son to continue this path. Uh-huh. So it is interesting, right? I mean, maybe that is still, you know, from some perspective, that is still being a good hand overall. But what is it going to lead to? Maybe, again, it's these long term implications of these decisions that don't seem to be well attended to. It seems more that it's there's a little bit of more like, everything's fine. We're at peace. Just keep doing this. It's fine.
All right. I'm going to move on to Allison here. But before I do want to mention, Harwin's a big boy. Why does he need his father to accompany him back to Harrenhal? Why doesn't Lionel just say, all right, go back. You're going to be the new lord of Harrenhal. You're going to leave tonight. Goodbye.
Yeah, I wonder. I wondered that too. Because is that Lionel actually just like trying to get away? Maybe he's not intending on coming.
Right, because he wants to quit. You know,
he was trying to quit, and so he's like, okay, well then, how about you give me this?
Give me a vacation. I need a little vacation here.
I need to take a personal day.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, so this is Allison's storyline. We've talked about a bit of this already. Allison confronts King Viserys and insinuates that Rhaenyra is having strong babies. Viserys refuses to listen and forbids his wife from the topic. Allison complains to Sir Criston, who calls Rhaenyra a very naughty word and then apologizes for it. Later, at the small council, Allison appears to be running the kingdom. She argues against Rhaenyra's marriage proposal to the king. Allison sits for supper with Laerys Strong, who is eager for gossip. She laments at the absence of her father and wishes Otto was still hand of the king. Laerys endeavors to make this happen with a bit of tongue chopping and arson. Allison seems shocked by this. When Laris confesses, he implies now that she owes him a favor. So, okay, let me just say, we just did our little power rankings this weekend. You put Otto at the top.
Yeah.
I think your pick of putting Otto high was certainly better than me putting Lionel Strong high on this list.
Yeah, after this episode, I would say.
Okay, so here's my question about this. Alicent kind of whines to Kristen Cole about how Rhaenyra is the problem, right? And so Kristen Cole goes and takes it upon himself to go and kind of reveal Harwin as the true father of Rhaenyra's children. And this is all orchestrated. He's provoking him. He uses the word son. Like, it's very odd that you have such interest in this particular boy's training. You don't see that kind of thing unless it's like a father to son. He gets pummeled and then it reveals Harwin, right? It was kind of provoked by Sir Criston Cole, but I think it might have been provoked ultimately by Alicent.
Yeah, she has Criston by her side for a variety of reasons, and I think a lot of it is that because he has, well, one, she spared him or allowed him to not kill himself, so there's a certain level of hey, you want to live? I'll keep you. I'll keep you here.
Okay, so one thing that she says to him when she's whining to him is she says, shouldn't honor and decency prevail in the end? Something like that. Something about honor and decency prevailing in the end. But then he goes and kind of like does this little trick and reveals this dirty secret. And then she laments to Laris about how she wishes her father was back, not because he would be impartial, but because he would be partial to her, which is not honorable or decent.
No, seems I know. To me.
So I wonder, like, does she know what she's implying to these men? Does she know what kind of men that they are and that they will be go out and do these actions? Or is she, like, legitimately shocked when these men take action?
That's a good question. Like, I had that same question at the end with Laris. Is that a genuine, like, well, I just, no, this is what I meant, you know?
Maybe she didn't know. But, maybe so, like, I, you know, she thought, yeah, maybe he'll, like, hobble his horse or something so he can't get back in time. And they'll give me a little extra time to talk to my husband about this. And what ends up happening, oh, you burned down the biggest castle in the kingdom.
Yeah, well, when you compare the two, right? So, like, she does this thing with Sir Criston, knowing that he either is still pining for Rhaenyra, right, or at a minimum is like, dude, I could be throwing those babies out. I guess I mean, I was just so easily replaced. So what does he do when she sort of puts this all together? Is he does something crafty? Uses the, you know, sort of bullies some kids
very subtly, like, implies, you know, says a few choice words to provoke. The other guy's like, I got this nuclear bomb over here. You want me to?
Right. Me to, and so I kind of, I want, I
press
I
the
think,
button right here. See that?
I feel like Alicent knows what she's doing with Sir Criston. Like, maybe that's been something that's kind of happened over the course of the last 10 years. And so she sort of does the same thing with Laris, but doesn't realize what she's, is not going to be that, you know, it'll be similar, but way different.
Okay, so let's talk about Laris for a minute. All right, so this guy, it's not like he just gets the hand out of the way. It's like, that's your father and brother, and I don't know how many other people that you grew up with in Harrenhal died in that fire. I mean, talk about the nuclear option. This guy he's a psychopath. He's a psychopath. Right. What is this guy not capable of after we've seen this?
Well, and if you believe that children can be a weakness, it's a perfect example. Yep, because they could kill you.
I guess so.
I mean, you know, his dad's weakness, you know, like not just from the perspective of like, well, he's put himself in jeopardy as the hand in this position because if he's got to choose between his son, he's like, but there's also another son that he's not taking account for. And this is really going to bite him.
Right. Man. Okay. So now we kind of have our Ramsay character. Basically, I mean, he's got a little bit Littlefinger, a little bit Ramsay, you know?
Yeah, so there was no question, you know, well, okay, so here's a bad guy. <You know? laughs> Before, we're like, ooh, who's this, and who's plotting, and what are their intentions? Like, oh, okay, bad guy. All right, we got bad guy.
Right. All right, so there's this one scene with Allison when she's talking with her daughter. Her daughter's Helena. And Helena's really into, like, bugs. She's really into entomology. And Allison gives out this perfectly authentic parent experience, like when you're bored and tired and disappointed all at the same time. This is my child. My child's into bugs. I'm going to have to sit here and listen to her talk about bugs for the next 4 years until she's into something else. I just love that scene so much. I mean, you contrast that scene with the interest she's taking in Aegon's development. Right.
Well, and you contrast that too with Damon just apparently just ignoring one of his daughters altogether. And then we see at the end, you know, that they're
right.
sitting there with their, you know, the smoldering mommy skeleton. And he's just like, eh, I'm out.
Right. You know, okay. So
these books aren't going to read themselves.
This is interesting because I think that I mean, I was really kind of on board with Alicent for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I'm comparing her to Cersei, like Cersei at least loved all of her children, right? She cared about the political parts of it. She was trying to help her kids learn politics. But even if her kids weren't into politics, even if, you know, even the girls, even the young pudgy boy or whatever, I always got the sense that she loved her children. She'd do anything for her children. Allison is clearly not interested in this girl. And doesn't even care when Aegon calls his brother. What does he call him? A twat. It's not like don't call your brother a twat. It's sort of like
yeah, he's a,
you can call him a twat when we're together, but don't do it in public. I don't want anyone else to see you. Hey, she even says you can cuff him around in public,
right?
Or in private, but you can't do it in public. I mean, not a great mom. Damon's not a great dad. Allison's not a great mom.
Yeah, no, it's how much of this is all about. I mean, we start with the childbirth, we end with a birth that doesn't work out, and it's like some. I mean, really, this was the episode of the child, right? I mean, that's his whole thing, and that's what when we see the Larys, you know, committing. Patricide and kills his brother at the same time. You know, it's like there's all these ramifications and the implication too that, you know, and the thing that's got Alicent all fired up is, you know, she could, you know, Rhaenyra could have her kids eliminated. I mean, that would be almost just kind of understood.
Yeah, I think you know, so. I think everyone kind of assumes that would be the consequence for the secret getting out.
Right, and it's not a situation of, oh, and then that will be a real big deal. It's just like, no, this has always been on the table, and it's within her right to not have a challenger for her claim. And so there's just so much of it. Like this is really showing, you know, this episode is so focused on, you know, bloodlines and just, you know. The complication of childhood, right? I mean, I think that it's really something that Larys's a voiceover is so key with the idea of it being a weakness,
yeah.
And that's why he can almost strike to some degree because he's like, your guys' preoccupation with your children can be either because it's your legacy or because you actually love these little farts, and he says, and that's a problem. That's when you're all vulnerable because you're not. Protecting yourself, you're protecting your legacy, and so what happens is you leave your present day self available for, you know, basically for vanquish.
Okay, so I think that Rhaenyra's part of the reason why she wants to go to Dragonstone is that she wants to protect the children, right? I really think that it's not just about people are gossiping in the halls. That I think that she's thinking, I've got to retreat to save my children because they're in danger here. But is it a good political move to actually retreat to Harrenhal? I feel like she's giving up real estate to the queen.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's, and it's even said so, right? I mean, it's like, okay, now you've got, you know, if she's gone, she's not there, she's not going to be on the councils, then now the queen can just pour honey into the king's ears.
Right? Well, and you saw that, you saw the makeup of the small council. The makeup of the small council was Rhaenyra, and Rhaenyra was the only one that would actually talk back to Alicent.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Rhaenyra gone, Alicent is probably just going to completely dominate that council, it seems to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's her plans are going to go unchallenged. And of course, now you have the other aspect of you don't even have a hand of the king right now. So,
all right. I shouldn't be shocked that Viserys has become this. But, oh my gosh, this guy is just... He just lets her push him around.
Yeah.
Like, even when he says to everyone, sit down, she won't sit down. He said, I don't want the blanket. She puts the blanket on. He says, it's a good match. She says, you can do what you want after I'm cold in the ground.
Right.
She is running the show, and it's not even subtle.
Nope.
So I'm a little bit, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be shocked about this guy, but oh my gosh, this guy.
Yeah, and it'd be easy to say, oh, well, he must just be in, like, so much pain, or he must be so much, like, so weak. But he's been doing this forever.
He's been doing it forever, and I think that the thing he does best is being intentionally blind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the kind of guy that will overlook his brother's problems, defend his brother in public, forgive his brother too many times, forgive his daughter too many times. He's absolutely the kind of guy that's not going to see Rhaenyra. Or maybe he knows deep down that, of course, Rhaenyra's children don't belong to her, to Lenor. He's willing to just live in the lie because that's the path of least resistance.
Right. And it's like, he knows. I mean, because the whole thing is like, say it. If you want to say it, if you don't say it, then it doesn't, then we're all going to move on. You know, if you don't say the thing that you're thinking, we're just going to all move on because it's not a real thing.
Right.
As soon as it's out in the open and it's said, you have to do something with it.
Right. Okay, dismemberment count. We lost a couple tongues. I'm assuming we've lost at least three or four. I don't know how many, but I'm guessing at least three or four. We got at least a full moon.
Mm-hmm. One full moon.
One full moon for Cheekspeak. I took the under. I think I got this one.
Yeah, you got the end.
Because you said it at 1.5.
1.5, yeah.
All right, so for next episode? Do you want me to set this one?
Yeah, why don't you set this one?
I'll set this one. I'm going to say 5.
Whoa. You think we're due. Like, we thought we were due before, but now everyone's older. So it's time to start some.
I just think that we haven't seen the last of Aegon's behind.
All right. I think we're due for a Carl.
We're going to see.
I mean, he got to bring Carl. Like, that was such a funny. That was a pretty funny one. I was like, well, why don't you bring in? You can bring Carl.
You can bring your friend.
We're going to the Dragonstone. I don't want to go to Dragonstone, but you can bring Carl.
Can Carl stay over for stovetop stuffing, Mom?
If that's what you're calling it, but yeah.
So I set it at 5.
I'm gonna go with the under.
You're gonna go with the finally he goes with the under.
Yeah.
I feel like I should probably.
Yeah, I go under, and this will be the episode that they just it's just called Ass Town.
The ass and the honeycomb. I'm gonna go under 2. I think it's gonna be right around 5, but I'm gonna go under just because that's what this show does. The show's gonna give us 3 chopped off tongues and no cracks. So That's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's gonna zig. So what do we think is going on with the? Is Damon's going? Is he gonna be headed out? I mean, he's got nothing really keeping him, right? He doesn't really like his kids all that much.
Well, he wanted to stay in Pentos, right?
Right.
And she didn't want to stay there. So you would think, you know, he can do what he wants. Maybe he sends the kids back to Driftmar because she wanted them raised there.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly at least loves one of the kids. I don't know. What do you think?
And maybe he sends them to the grandparents.
I don't think that he's going to be boring middle-aged Damon forever.
No, I think he's headed to Dragonstone, or
Well, if he goes to Dragonstone, he's going to find out that someone's living there now.
Right, right. But if he gets to King's Landing, because there's now an opening for the job of the hand, right?
There is, but there's also an opening for Rhaenyra's lover.
It's true.
So it could be that, you know, he lost his wife, she lost her paramour. Now they finally can do the Targaryen thing.
The Targaryen inevitability.
And maybe he gets his son.
It feels like there's something, right? They showed them both, you know, like they were both cut from him to her, and it felt like that they were, the show was setting that up.
This is kind of like that thing where like you had like a high school sweetheart, never worked out, and then you both become middle aged. You're both a little bit more boring than you used to be, and you're like, yeah, why not?
You still speak High Valyrian. Not as well as I used to.
That's right. Well, we haven't seen this new version of Rhaenyra with Damon.
Right.
He's still a man of few words, this guy.
Well, they live like they said. These are exciting people. The last time we saw them, and now they're not. So maybe it's time to get the band back together and see what happens.
Okay, Steve. Is this a Dorne, a Dinklage, or a Dany episode?
I think it's a Dany -2 for me.
Oh, you weren't impressed.
No, well, I don't know that it was.
Is it the time jump?
It might be the time jump. It might be it just because it was so. It was just took a while to kind of get my sea legs.
Uh-huh.
Everything is important, right? Everything. I mean, I know but it's almost like we're watching a new series, and it took a little bit to sort of.
Yeah, I feel like a table setting episode.
Yeah, and so I don't, and so I'm not necessarily faulting it at being like a. I'm not when I say it's a Dany -2. It's almost like a necessary low Dany.
No, a Dany -2 means that it was a good episode. It was a little bit. It wasn't as good as some of the other Dany episodes we've seen, but it's still a good episode. So
yeah, and I won't give it a Dorne because a Dorne to me is like a misfire.
Yes,
and I don't think it was a misfire. No, this just wasn't. It was just like a little hard to get into the Where Are They Now episode of these folks, and then it was like, oh well, Damon Targaryen's is kind of a bummer. And
all right, I'm gonna give this a properly Dany episode.
Okay.
I thought that the two older actors who are playing Alicent and Rhaenyra were really impressive, and I think that when I first saw the first time I watched, it was like, boy, this new Alicent is like a force to be reckoned with. I can totally see this woman going to war.
Mm.
And then the second time I watched, I couldn't take my eyes off Rhaenyra. I thought, she's exactly who you would be if you were kind of a hellion in your youth. And now you're older, wiser parent. I think she's playing this perfectly. So I really enjoyed those two. And I'll have to say, I was really disappointed to see Laena go down. She seemed like a genuinely good person. Harwin and Lionel Strong, I really liked those characters. Didn't get to know them at all. I was excited to see sort of the whole Harrenhal thing, and then it was like 30 seconds of Harrenhal before it totally burns down.
Right.
So it's like they continually choose to introduce a character that we root for and then kill them off.
Yeah, and then also then you're also being somewhat deprived of your larger world that you want to get.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's right. Because I don't feel like I'm going to go back. I mean, it could be that we go back to Pentos, but it's not like I really care about Reggio.
Right.
With a name like Reggio, he's not going to be around for very long. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah. Like, how invested am I going to be in this guy? So anyway, I think it was a good episode, a good table setting episode. Looking forward to seeing how it all shakes down next week.
Yeah, and seeing more of Viserys is good, but you know, everyone's just a bummer. It's just, and I know
well,
that.
Well, like I said before, I would not, if you asked me to describe Aegon, I'd have a few words about him. Being a bummer is not necessarily one of them.
No. He's a breath fresh
he's
air.
He's a little bit. He's an interesting guy. Do you think
what little?
Do you think what is he thinking when he's looking out the window? Does he just like? Is he like excited that he will one day be the lord of all that he sees, or is like there like someone bathing on a rooftop nearby? what's going on in his mind?
Well, and that's the thing is like at first I was reading it like, oh, you know, because he could be thinking of himself as the heir, and you know, this is I can do with this.
And he's clearly not
realm,
about
whatever
that.
I want. But then he said, and he tells you, he's like, I don't want to challenge the her title. I just want to do this.
Hey, mom.
I just want to do that. I'm really good at this. Like, I'm really good at this.
It's my favorite. You know, I mean, it's like my favorite thing. Like it's very rare that your favorite thing is the thing that you're best at.
Right. You never. He's like, do the thing you love. You never work a day in your life, right?
I mean, that's what he's figured out.
Yeah.
It's like, mom, have you seen me? Look, I'm the guy that puts wings on pigs. Like, that's my lane. I'm the guy that will just stand in front of an open window and gratify myself. That's me. Just can you just love me for me?
That was his pink dread.
Oh, goodness, this guy.
Behold, the pink dread.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Of course, we'd love you to rate and review, follow, subscribe. And if you're not into rating and reviewing, share with a friend. We'd love a little bit of exposure online if that's your way that you communicate with your friends. All right. Without further ado, here is Dr. Kavita Mudan Finn. We're with Kavita Mudan Finn, and this is a question from Avia. So Avia asks, I've heard lots of different claims about childhood in the medieval era. I've heard that the very concept is an invention of the modern mind. I've also heard that in pre-industrial societies, maturity was delayed, puberty being a late teens thing. I've heard that child labor was a general practice. Would you please speak to the common lives of young people? Were there dolls, other toys, schools? Was there a difference between rich and poor? Thank you.
So in medieval Europe, at least, children were typically seen as sort of small, unformed adults. But the important thing is that they were also seen as members of a very specific and much larger community. And so they had very specific roles within that community. So, for instance, children of the lower and the emerging middle classes would start working as soon as they were able in a variety of occupations. They would start like with simple tasks like clean things, feed animals, help with the harvest. And then by the time they were young teenagers, they would often be apprenticed to learn a trade. This would be something like blacksmithing, tailoring, taking care of animals, baking, butchering, jewelry, making jewelry, being like if you were wealthy or maybe you'd get into being a merchant, you'd get into banking. This is how the Medici Bank became a family business because they just kept pulling the kids in to do the work. Some of them better than others. Like they're pretty much most businesses tended to be family businesses. Okay. And they were just sort of passed on from parent to child. And in some cases it was father to son, but sometimes you would have women taking over these businesses as well. There is, for instance, in the Book of Marjorie Kemp from 15th century England, Marjorie is herself a relatively wealthy woman, and she owns an inn, she tries brewing, she does a whole variety of different things. So by the time you were in your late teens, you were essentially working full-time in whatever trade had been chosen for you. Like it was very rare that you got to choose this for yourself. This was something that was almost always chosen for you.
Right.
And social mobility was tremendously difficult. One of the only paths to any kind of real social mobility was to go into the church. And there was the trade-off that if you were a man and you went into the church, you basically disavowed all right to have your own family because you were expected to be celibate. So one of the few options to rise in social mobility was through the church. Hypothetically, a young man from a poor background could join a monastery, could become a monk, could rise through merit or some other type of thing that didn't involve bloodlines and become an abbot or a bishop or even the Pope. The Borgia family wasn't necessarily a wealthy family at first, and they managed to get two popes in and around all of the Medicis and the Orsinis and all of the other fancy aristocratic popes that were coming up. That's part of the reason why they were why they ran into so much propaganda trouble.
I was just going to ask, that mm-hmm. choice to have a lower class boy enter the clergy, that would have been sort of one of the only avenues for education too. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that would be correct. If you were a member of the royal of the lower classes, the pretty much the only chance to get educated would be through the church.
Okay.
And this happened to a lesser extent for women. There were convents in specific part. There were specific convents in different parts of Europe that were known for learning, for music, for libraries, for mysticism. But overall, women had far less access to formal education. Okay. And as I said, the main route to formal schooling in medieval Europe was through the Catholic Church. Monasteries were where a lot of these. It was where books were being copied. It was where books were being produced, and it was largely where knowledge was being disseminated. And eventually from the monasteries, some of these monasteries then developed into universities and colleges across Europe. You're looking at Oxford, Cambridge, Paris, Bologna, Salamanca, all of those institutions that were formed in the medieval period. And of course, these were pretty much exclusively restricted to men. The few references that we get to women in these kinds of institutions, women like Eloise of the Paraclete, women like Hildegard of Bingen, they were very much exceptions to the rule, and they had to go through all kinds of hoops to get where they did. Now, in contrast, outside of Europe, the oldest continually operating university in the entire world is the University of Al-Karouin. It's in present-day Morocco, and it was actually founded in the 9th century by a woman, the daughter of a wealthy merchant. So there's the university system, again, was kind of pulled into Europe through these trade networks and through these kind of more global networks of knowledge and networks of culture.
I guess I have one more question just to follow up on this, between sort of the lives of children between classes. Mm-hmm. And I guess you could almost view the same sort of trade issues if you were slated to be someone of the ruling class. Your trade is sort of... I guess your trade would be considered to rule.
Yes.
And so then that would affect how you are educated and how you're trained, right? Mm-hmm. So would that involve a kind of education, a kind of formal education that maybe the lower classes wouldn't have access to?
To some degree, yes. For one thing, that is how members of the upper classes being educated in how to read. Because the thing is, like, we think of the medieval period and we think, oh my God, everyone was illiterate, which is not necessarily true, because there are also different levels of literacy. There is people who could read, people who could read and write, which is a much smaller number. There were a lot of people who knew how to read, but could not necessarily also write. And there were also some people who knew arithmetic, but did not necessarily know how to read. So education tended to be somewhat more of a piecemeal affair. Like, you learned what you needed to know in order to do your job, basically.
If you have a question for Double Dragon, you can send that to book@baldmove.com. And now, a knee-jerk reaction for my daughter, Nessa. So I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
How do you feel about the older versions of Alicent and Rhaenyra? I think I like both of the older.
I think I do too. I was a little nervous, but I think I like them.
Okay. I'll be honest. I'm a little bit sad to see Harwin Breakbones Strong go.
Was he the older
he was Rhaenyra's lover.
Like, see, I have no attachment to Harwin at all.
Oh, I'm a little sad.
Why? He was boring.
Well, because Rhaenyra loved him, and he complicated things for everyone, basically, because he's the true father. And you could tell that he, like, really loved his sons.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Easy come, easy go.
Thank you.